Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside our ESPN NBA reporter, Nick Friedell, alongside himself, the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Mr. Brian Windhorst, coming to us, as always, live from the Thunderdome. Coming up, guys, we're going to discuss how much stock we should put in the Suns' thrilling overtime win over the Jazz. Really fun game. Keep it locked for that. First, though, we begin with the return of Kevin Durant to the Brooklyn lineup last night after missing 23 games with that strained left hamstring. KD checked into the game for the first time with about 7.5 minutes left in the second quarter. By the half, the Nets had 79 points and a 20-point lead. Durant only played 19 minutes, but boy, was it a 19-minute stretch. He shot a perfect 5-for-5 from the floor, 5-for-5 from the line, a total of 17 points. And afterward, KD talked about his mentality coming into this game.
I expected to come out here and play the way I played. I wasn't trying to ease into the game. I just wanted to go out there and dive right into the action. Whatever coach throws at me, I got to be prepared for, and I'm sure he's going to try to toss some curveballs at me and see how I handle it, and I'm looking forward to it.
So, Brian, you and I have talked about this over the years so many times. KD comes back from injury like pretty much no one else in the NBA. He never seems to need to ramp up. What is your reaction to this, quote, perfect game from him after missing 23 games?
Yeah, that's, you know, what he said about it, it sounded a little bit, you know, arrogant, saying he expected to play that way. Well, so did I. I mean, he's never out of shape. And his jump shot, which is the basis of his game, is so efficient and effortless, and he's got such incredible length that it's very easy for him to get into rhythm. It's really remarkable. There's not many people who are built like this or have the skills like this. And so he is built to be able to return from injury, which is why I'm not worried at all about the lack of time that he's had with his new teammates. He is able to adapt, and he's able to play at a very high level very quickly. It's one of the great things about his asset package.
B's absolutely right, Rach, because when you watch Kevin Durant last night, he looked just like the old Kevin Durant. And it was so interesting to me listen to Blake Griffin after that game. He goes, yeah, he was pretty awesome. It's pretty easy to play with a guy like that. Steve Nash said the same thing. Everybody can find a way to be better alongside Kevin Durant. He makes everyone better just by being out there. When he's hitting shots like he normally does and he did last night, he makes that team a legit title contender. And it doesn't matter how much time he misses. As soon as he steps on the floor, he's ready to go again, and he looks like his old self.
And Nick, you cover KD, he was with the Warriors. What did you see about the way his game meshed around Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, that you think applies with Kyrie Irving and James Harden?
The biggest key to me is how smart all of those players are, Rach, that you just named. Mm-hmm. Smart players can always figure it out. And of course, last night I'm watching that game through the Warriors lens, and everybody's going, why aren't the Warriors the same? They lost Kevin Durant. They lost Kevin Durant. Put Kevin Durant around Kyrie Irving and James Harden. They're gonna figure it out. Their basketball IQs are off the charts. He's enjoying playing the game again. I think he enjoys being with this group. And it's obvious when you watch and listen to him how much fun he's having right now playing basketball.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing about the Nets that's so remarkable is their three stars really have meshed so much faster than any of these manufactured big threes that we've seen in the last decade. And it really shouldn't be that way, because all three of them, you know, have some of the same skill sets. All three of them like to have the ball, like to put the ball on the court. But Durant is the leader here. And the way he's approached this is this exact attitude, which is, I'm going to come in with confidence, and we're going to work together, and we're going to be fine. And it is worn off on his teammates, even though he's barely played with them. And so when you see him come into a game like this, and look, they had the huge advantage in this one, even though they were missing James Harden. They were playing at home. They were playing a team that in the Pelicans that isn't great on defense. But the way he approached this whole game is an indication of the way that the Nets have approached this whole season. And that is one of the reasons why they are the favorite to win the East and have a great chance to win the title this year.
Yeah, look, there's only been seven games that all three of their stars have played together since James Harden was traded on January 14th. It is April. It is April, and they've only played seven games together. But again, you look at what they are able to do when just two of their three stars are in the lineup. And again, Nick, you saw this when KD was with Golden State. You don't necessarily need all three. If you have a couple, apparently you're doing pretty well in Brooklyn. I want to circle back, guys, to that Jazz Suns overtime thriller from last night. Devin Booker, CP3, combining for 64 points, staving off Donovan Mitchell's 41-piece, lifting Phoenix over Utah, 117-113. Now, only 5,500 people were in attendance, but it sure felt like a playoff game. Any crowd is a good crowd these days, Nick. How much stock do you put in this game for the Phoenix Suns?
It was a nice win for Phoenix, Rach, but here's the difference. Phoenix still hasn't proven they can win in the postseason. And as much momentum as they're generating right now, as much talk in the MVP conversation as CP3 has, the difference to me is this team has yet to prove that it can win. They've got guys in Booker and Aiden who haven't even been in a postseason game. It's so rare to be able to take that kind of step from being all the way out to going all the way through the West and into the finals. So I like what they're building. I really like Monty Williams. But I'm not putting too much stock into this particular game because I want to see what happens a month and a half from now.
I see it exactly the opposite. I think because they haven't been in any high-value games, the core of their team has never even spent one second in the playoffs. They have Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. That's pretty much it. Everybody else has never been there. That, you know, I know it's a regular season game in April, but getting a game where they have pressure and they feel consequences is good. And the fact that that they had to go to overtime to get it done is good. That is the kind of things they need to get under their belt as they build towards the playoffs. I do think Nick is right. I think the experience, the lack of the experience, is one of the hardest challenges that this team's going to have to overcome, especially if they have to go up against a loaded team like the Clippers or the Lakers in the postseason. But this was a step in the right direction. Here's something else. They have the number two seed, and they're only a half game back of the Jazz now, and they've now, with this victory, clinched the season series. The number one seed is not out of their reach, and for them to have a really good chance of swimming through the pool of sharks that the Western Conference is, getting home court throughout the West playoffs would be a huge step in that direction.
Yeah, 1.5 games back. I mean, there's definitely time to make that up, and it really is remarkable. We're even having this conversation about, as you know, Brian, a team that has not been in the playoffs at all in a decade, and then here we are talking about,
right,
can they get the number one seed in the East because they just beat the number one seed, in the West. That is obviously a huge mover for them and a testament, of course, to Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and all the guys around there, the way they picked it up this season. All right, guys, stick with us. Coming up, Hall of Fame NBA front office exec Rick Wells is joining The Jump. He's discussing his legendary career just hours after announcing he is stepping away from the Warriors after this season. Stick around for that. We're so thrilled to have Rick join us. Some big news that broke this morning. Hall of Famer Rick Welts is going to step away from his role as Warriors president and CEO after this season. Welts spent 46 years working in the NBA. In 2011, he became the most prominent executive in American pro sports to reveal to the public that he is gay. Welts will remain with the Warriors as an advisor, and the team said it would likely name a new president within a week. Welts also played a major role in marketing the NBA during his 17 years as an executive with the league office. In addition to developing the idea for an NBA All-Star Weekend in 1984, he also promoted the Dream Team, the WNBA. Warriors owner Joe Lacob released this statement on Welts. Quote, his intuition proved to be spot on, as is his leadership, vision, creativity, and relationship building enabled us to reach heights never seen before in the NBA on the business side. And Commissioner Adam Silver shared this on Welts' legacy. Quote, simply put, Rick Welts played a transformational role in creating the modern NBA during his more than 40 years as a pioneering league and team executive. His extraordinary vision, leadership, humanity have defined his Hall of Fame career, which has set the standard of excellence in the sports industry. And now, we are joined by the man of the hour, Rick Welts. Welcome to The Jump. Congratulations on such a remarkable career. How, when do you know it's time to step away?
You know, Rachel, sitting here listening to this, it sounded more like an obituary.
Never.
That sounds very frightening. You know, I originally thought about this a year ago, and it would have been a really bad idea because we were a mess a year ago. Our country was a mess. Our sport was a mess. We didn't know the way forward. Today, sitting here with the organization we have in place, with Chase Center ready to rock and roll, today we announced we're going to be welcoming fans back to Warriors games live at Chase Center on April 23rd for the balance of the season. There's the light at the end of the tunnel is a brilliant future, and it just feels like the right time for me.
Well, I mentioned some of the aspects of the league that you had a hand in shaping, things that have become tent poles of what we think about when we think about pro basketball, the All-Star game, the Dream Team, the W. What are you going to look back on and be the most proud of?
That's a hard one. I think in terms of its long-lasting effect, I think All-Star, which was born out of a young executive trying to figure out how to keep his job.
It worked, Rick. It worked.
Well, it worked. So, you know, I think that has to be great. But I think the pride in launching the W along with Val Ackerman and David Stern and Gary Stevenson, that's the gift that keeps on giving here in the 25th anniversary and one that I continue to be super bullish on in the future as well.
Absolutely influenced so many. And when you came out in 2011, it was such a big moment for so many around professional sports. It gave so many others the courage, the confidence to make similar declarations in their own workplaces, get to just be who they are. How often does someone talk to you about the impact you had in that area?
You know, I didn't quite know what I was signing up for, but it's been so gratifying. There isn't a week that goes by that someone doesn't reach out to me from somewhere in the sports world, teams or leagues or colleges, and, you know, just trying to connect with somebody who they feel can understand the situation they're in and can be a sympathetic ear to talk it through with them. And I that's a great honor, a great privilege, and really a terrific part of the outcome of that 2011 announcement.
Rick, first of all, congrats on a hell of a run. I know how proud you are of your time specific to the Warriors. Out of that run and seeing that team play the way it did, what are you going to remember most about that group?
You know, for me, this one's easy. It's Klay Thompson's 37-point quarter against Sacramento. We will never in our lifetime see that again, and I got to witness it live.
Pretty great.
Rick, 46 years, Rick, you're not that old. Come on, I got to check that number.
Well, you got to remember I started
at
16.
I remember you proudly giving some of us a tour of the Chase Center when it was near completion. And I know you've done a lot of things and been involved in a lot of projects, but you really, short of digging the hole yourself, really got that project together. It's going to be a lasting thing for the city of San Francisco. Where does this, you know, rank in the things that you accomplished and what kind of accomplishment was it to get that off the ground and create that structure?
Well, you have to have fearless ownership. So there were a million times along the path, Joe Lacob and Peter Guber said, we're crazy to try to get this done. We got it done 100% privately financed in probably the most difficult political environment in the country in San Francisco. And so in terms of degree of difficulty, it tops the charts. In terms of pride, it does as well. Because you guys know better than anybody, these things are not about places to play basketball games. They're about places that create lifetime memories for people. That's what they have been for me. So it's a great legacy for decades to come in San Francisco.
You said my two favorite words, Rick, when it comes to arenas, privately finance, ownership there, the organization taking responsibility itself instead of taking away resources from the public. I'm still impressed with that. I'm going to talk about it every time. Rick, you and Bill Russell also had an incredible friendship over the years. It started when you were both with the Supersonics. Bill would call you, quote, the white boy down the hall because you sat, well, down the hall from his office. And Rick, Mr. Russell has something to say to you.
Congratulations, Rick, on an incredible career in the NBA. I'll never forget the early days in Seattle. and the bonds we formed over the years. The white boy down the hall turned out to be one of the greatest executives in the history of professional sports. Thank you for all you've done for the NBA and the WNBA. Welcome to retirement. I'm so proud of you.
That's pretty cool, right? Rick, what is your friendship with Bill meant to you over the course of your career?
Just what a gift. Like, there was no reason for him to open up to me and invite me in as a friend in my 20s. A friendship that lasts through today. Called to wish him happy birthday on his birthday not so long ago. So that was awesome. Thank you guys for doing that.
Well, you might always be the white boy down the hall to him, but you are an icon of the game to us, Rick. You always will be. We know that you will still be in and around the game plenty in the ensuing years, so we look forward to seeing you there. But really, congratulations, Rick. Such a run you have had. You have changed the NBA, the WNBA, basketball globally around the world. We are all lucky to have been able to watch you do that. Congrats.
You guys rock. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. We'll be right back here on The Jump. We'll say farewell to Nick, too. But when The Jump returns, we've got a new face making her first appearance on the show. So stick around to find out who that is and how she feels about Anthony Edwards calling out his teammates' defensive prowess last night. Stick with us. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Brian Windhorst, but also now joining the show, one of ESPN's College Hoops analysts, Around the Horn panelists, host of MSG PM in New York, and most importantly, let's get right to the fact that she was a standout for the Georgetown Hoyas, a team that I will forever and always love. Monica McNutt making her Jump debut. Welcome, friend. It is great to see you on this screen.
Man, thank you, Rachel. I don't know if I get to come. I hope I get to come back. But this first intro, I love it. I got to bottle this one up.
Dude, you played for Georgetown. You can come back as often as you want. I want to get to the Knicks, though, since you do cover them day to day. They lost to the Celtics last night in a close game. That's their second straight loss by 2 points. So they've now lost 5 of 6 overall. But a lot of them have been close. The Celtics and Knicks were tied for 7th in the East entering last night. So now Knicks are at 8, squarely in that play-in tournament range. So, Monica, for you, what would be defined as a successful season for this Knicks team?
The answer simply for me, Rachel, is if the Knicks return to the playoffs. I mean, the fan base loved when they were sitting up at 4th in the standings. But, you know, prior to the All-Star break, we kind of knew that the worst part of the schedule, or the most challenging, I should say, was coming after the All-Star. And I think that's what we've seen. But I also think you can't overlook the absence of Mitchell Robinson, who was making tremendous strides before the foot injury and then the hand injury that now has him out for the remainder of the season. Particularly when I think about last night's loss. They needed somebody to give them a little extra oomph and energy in terms of the glass. And down the stretch, they just needed to be able to make big time shots, and they came up short. But what I love about this team is when you talk to Julius Randle, you talk to RJ Barrett, they all say that we are doing things the right way, and we believe in Tibbs, and we believe in one another. So I think this team will be a playoff team this year.
So this is a little bit unpopular, but what I think would be successful for them is if they, you know, touched the play-in tournament, but then ended up in the lottery and had a chance to get a top four pick. And I know that that's not what Knicks fans want to hear, and I know that's not what Tom Thibodeau is thinking. I know that's not what any of the players are thinking or the organization, but this team still needs more talent. And in this draft, being able to get in that top four would be huge for them. So I'd love to see playoff games back at the Garden, but I don't want to see a mediocre Knicks team. I want to see a great Knicks team. I don't think it's going to go that way, but I do think their schedule, as Monica said, is hard. They've still got to go out west. And we know that's a grind out there. So even holding on to, you know, the 7 or 8, where they'd have a chance to only need to win one game, get in the playoffs, would be an accomplishment for them now. I know that it wouldn't be popular if they slid down to 10, but it might be not such a bad thing after all.
I mean, look, for me, and I've been saying this for months, the win-loss record at all kind of doesn't matter to me when evaluating how successful their season has been. They are clearly building something in New York, and they are doing it the right way. I have not been able to say that sentence in a very, very long time. So this is success. This is how a franchise pulls itself up. And honestly, whatever the final numbers are, whether they're in the play-in, whether they actually make it to the playoffs, whether, as you say, Brian, they are into the lottery and end up getting a pick there, it's a success to me so far. It would take a lot to derail it, for me at least, at this point. I want to move on to the Minnesota Timberwolves, though. Not a successful season for them thus far. They allowed a season-high 141 points to the Pacers last night in a loss. After the game, rookie Anthony Edwards was asked how much of the defensive issues can be attributed to new head coach Chris Finch. Edwards very quick to keep the focus on the players on the floor. Take a listen here.
To me, it never matters about, like, the coach's plan. And, like I just said earlier, like, it's all about effort. Like, coach can't come on the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do shit, but tell us what to do. We got to go out there and, you know what I'm saying, put it in the game. Like, he could tell us be in the gaps, contest everything, no easy layups, contest every layups, contest that all dunks, everything. But he just saying words. We got to go out there and do this. So, I mean, it's up to, like I said, defense is effort. Like, if you give effort, then you got great defense.
Brian, it kind of reminds me of a couple days ago where some of the Warriors players, after they sent the Atlanta Hawks to the line 45 times, they got the question, doesn't Steve Kerr keep you guys, tell you guys not to foul? He's like, yeah, he says it before the game, at halftime, after the game. Anthony Edwards kind of saying the same thing there, right?
Yeah, so I like Anthony Edwards a lot. I also like the personality he brings to the league. I think he's going to be a guy that we're going to love to watch play and hear from for years to come. But I think he might have been talking to himself there, because he's frankly one of the worst defensive players in the league. And he ranks dead last in defensive RPI amongst all small forwards, 98 out of 98. There's 506 players who've been in the NBA this year. He ranks 500th in RPM on defense. So, yes, the Wolves are a bad defensive team. He's the worst defender on the worst defensive team. So he needs to take his own advice, I guess, starting immediately.
Monica, you're laughing through that whole full screen there.
The numbers definitely speak to it. And Anthony Edwards, in my mind, will forever be remembered as 7 points and a poster dunk. But I remember he only had 7 points. But I think the one thing I do like about this, Rachel, is we've heard various retired NBA players talk about how pivotal and crucial a guy's first few years in the league can be, depending on the organization in which he lands, right? And so, yes, the Timberwolves are struggling, both in terms of their team record, in terms of all the statistics, but you still have a rookie here who at least still is showing, or speaking, at least putting fight out there verbally and acknowledging, you know, we're not about to start making excuses. 100% agree with you, though, Wendy. You got to look in the mirror first on all those defensive comments, sir.
How much of defense is effort, Monica? When you're out there playing, is it 100%? Is it, what percentage would you put it at?
Effort for me on defense is like 80%, because it's a want to. It's taking pride in it. And we saw it last weekend in the NCAA tournament, both at the men's and women's level. Defense can really change games. And now the NBA level, we're dealing with elite offensive members. But I think when you have a team that has bought in and takes pride in what they do defensively, that's when you see that top tier defensive energy like we've seen all season, actually, from the Jazz.
Yeah, not so much with the Timberwolves, though. So we will still be looking for that with them. Stick with us on the show. Coming up, we're going to talk a little Andre Drummond, ready to return tonight for the Lakers. Plus, Marc Gasol says he's fully committed now to the new role he has with Drummond in town. We'll dig into those comments next. But first, here's what The Jump recommends for today. The 2021 NBA Mock Draft, ESPN Plus. Is Cade Cunningham still at the top? How high did Jalen Suggs climb after that NCAA tournament run? Find out during the break and then come back, hang out with us. We'll be here. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Brian Windhorst, Monica McNutt. Monica, you cover the college game. Who do you think Dallas takes at number one?
I think this is an easy one. It's Texas's Charlie Collier with their number one pick. I mean, Charlie's terrific. She's got great size. And going into the NCAA tournament, she had 17 double-doubles. That was third in D1. And she almost broke the internet earlier this year when she dropped 44 points in a contest. And it's really been tremendous to see Charlie kind of continue to grow and mature. I had an opportunity to cover her a little bit as a freshman. And I remember Karen Aston saying at the time, if she can ever get coordinated and in shape, she's going to be a problem. And it looks like she managed to do that.
She looks plenty of both of those things to me, just saying. All right, moving on to the defending champs in the NBA, the LA Lakers. They're going to be getting a boost tonight. Coach Frank Vogel says Andre Drummond is a go after suffering a torn toenail, which just means his entire toenail came all the way off, people. That was in his Lakers debut. He missed the last three games after that. Vogel has made it clear Drummond is the starting center. Well, where does that leave Marc Gasol? Gasol, of course, started in Drummond's absence. He said last week the Drummond signing was, quote, a tough pill to swallow. Really seemed down about it in a press conference with reporters after it happened, but he seemed to change his tune after the Lakers game Tuesday. Here's our Dave McMenamin with the question and Gasol's answer.
Marc, statistically, this is one of your better stretches, if not your best stretch since joining the Lakers, and it comes at a time where, you know, another center is going to be most likely healthy on this trip and playing. What can you do to keep the momentum or continue to impact the game if, you know, there's less playing?
I'll stay ready. I'm going to tell you this. I'm fully committed to the team. I'll stay ready. When my number is called, I understand, you know, we have to get, you know, under acclimated to what we try to do. We have to get back our two, you know, main guys, Bron and AD, whenever they come back. And we have to get that group going and get some chemistry going with the first unit for them. I will be ready no matter what happens, no matter if it's, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, the whatever position, if it's some nights I might not play, but I'll stay ready no matter what.
So that was pretty different from what we heard from him a few days earlier, Brian. Do you feel he's just had time to work through this and is a genuine change of heart here?
Yeah, that sounds like the pro that I know Marc Gasol to be. What he was saying last week was kind of surprising because we knew for weeks that there was a good chance Andre Drummond was going to be a Laker. Maybe he was surprised he was just given the starting job. But, you know, let's talk about two pieces of reality for the Lakers. One is that they really need offense right now without AD and LeBron. They just struggle. And Andre Drummond can bring more offense at this point than Marc Gasol can. And that's a driving factor. In addition to the fact they had to compete to get him, and they had to promise him the starting job to get him to sign with the Lakers. The second thing is this. Really, the goal for Drummond or Gasol is to force the Lakers to have to play them in the postseason. What I mean by that is, when the chips are down, the expectation is that it's going to be Anthony Davis playing center for the Lakers, and they're going to go with more of a perimeter-based shooting lineup. Either of these guys, whether it's Drummond or Gasol, needs to play so well at both ends of the court that they force that, if they force Frank Vogel's hand, and that'll be the challenge for them going forward.
Yeah, Wendy, you're absolutely right. And, you know, when I first heard this quote, I was like, Marc Gasol, you do not have enough cachet to be whining about playing time. But then now I kind of understand why he may have said that. I think sometimes we penalize athletes for being honest, even though he knew all of those things, potentially, Wendy, that you just talked about. And even though his numbers this season are a fraction of what his career numbers are overall, it still hurts a little bit, right? Like, these athletes still take a ton of pride in what they do and the opportunities that they're given. But now he's done a full circle in terms of getting on board to whatever the formula is going to be to get the Lakers another ring. And I'm certain that he wants one of those. So good answer from him. And I just, you know, I agree with you, Wendy. Both of these guys want to be on the floor. And so he's got to have the right attitude to do that. That's the first step.
And Frank Vogel said that he has sat him down, that they have had a conversation. And Frank stressed to him, look at the playoffs last year. He can say, we played Dwight Howard a lot in X series or Y series. We moved JaVale McGee here in X series or Y series. And then, yeah, we pulled them back in other series where other guys were more effective. He said, you're not always going to be plan A. Now, Marc Gasol's initial reaction to that was, yeah, but I'm not even plan B or C. I'm more like plan D. But I think you can see in his face and his voice as of yesterday, he's realized that there are places for him to make an impact. And let's be honest, the Lakers' health this season has been such an issue with so many injuries. We can't discount that he will be playing big minutes when it matters, just if the entire team isn't healthy the way the Lakers hope and expect. So it will be interesting to see how he does going forward. Looking forward to Drummond getting back in the lineup tonight as well. All right, guys, coming up, the Jazz are the only team in the league that has not lost three straight games this season. Is that going to change tonight? They're in danger of it. That's up next. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The NBA has suspended Fred VanVleet, DeAndre Bembry, Talen Horton-Tucker, each one game. All three players, of course, left the bench during that Raptors-Lakers dust-up on Tuesday. OG Anunoby, Montrezl Harrell, fined for their roles in the melee. Brian, any surprises with the discipline here?
This was the biggest brawl in the history of Tampa in the NBA. You know, it's been a long time since we've seen guys get suspended for leaving the bench. Usually there's assistant coaches that are blockading them. Look for that to come back. People got a little lax here. This was an easy call for the NBA.
OG pulled the whole WWE move. It's called the sidewalk slam. I had to ask my co-host about that. Cass, shout out to Cass for my WWE technology. And he just gets a fine. Like, that to me is the ridiculous part of this. I get the rule on leaving the bench, but like, you can't do that.
Hey, I like Brian calling out the long storied history of NBA basketball in Tampa. This indeed, Brian, will be a deep chapter in that book. Let's move on to Russell Westbrook. Went 23-14-15 versus the Magic, his NBA best 20th triple-double. These are the best numbers he's put up since his Oklahoma City days. So, Monica, what do you feel has gotten into Westbrook? What's working now in D.C.?
Well, Rachel, when I knew I was coming on with Wendy, I had to get on my little phone and hit my people up, you know, the little reporting. And I'm just hearing that basically it's the first time that he's been truly healthy. And I think sometimes we forget that guys with high motors and high energy, like, they also have bodies that take a lot of wear and tear. Bradley Beal has been out a little bit over this stretch, although he did play last night. But I think Russ still has energy and passion for the game, and he's healthy, and that matters.
Yeah, and also, as Monica mentioned, Beal has been out. He got in a rhythm. And when Westbrook is in a rhythm, he can put up some of the greatest numbers we've ever seen, and he is in a rhythm.
Yeah, and we'll still have to see how his career with the Wizards ends up playing out as he ages, his athleticism. But I will say this, Bradley Beal has made a point more than once. He says, Russell Westbrook is among the best teammates I have ever played with. So at least we know the chemistry is working there. They just got to get the record to catch up. All right, our league pass game of the night, Blazers-Jazz, 10 o'clock Eastern. Utah's coming off that OT loss to the Suns last night we talked about at the top of the show. So that was their second straight loss. Utah, the only team in the NBA that hasn't lost three in a row this season. Tonight they host the Blazers, who, of course, won five of their last seven games. So, Brian, do you think tonight is the night for the Jazz? Does the clock strike midnight? Do they lose their third straight?
Well, they're back at home, which is obviously a huge thing for them. Got a great home court advantage, but they got a rest disadvantage because they had to play last night an overtime game. So the Blazers are right now in sixth place, trying to crack into that top five, trying to prove that they're one of the teams that can win the West. I don't ever want to see Damian Lillard, especially when he has a rest advantage. So it's going to be a challenge for him. But you know, the Jazz don't have too many consecutive bad shooting nights. They've had two consecutive bad shooting nights, so look out on that one.
Yeah, I agree with you, Wendy. The Jazz, they've been shooting uncustomarily bad. I think it was 26% over the last two games, and that's a big deal. I actually think they might drop this one, though. It's a back-to-back. And beyond just Dame, the Blazers gave up 47 points in the first quarter against the Clippers, so I think there's a lot on their mind in terms of getting right, playing some defense, and getting a win over a good team.
What is that like, Monica, within the team dynamic? Because one loss, one win, everyone knows it doesn't mean that much in the grand scheme of things, especially when you get to this point of the regular season. It can be a little bit of a slog for teams. But what is that like inside the locker room on both sides, as you point out, saying, and we really need one tonight?
Well, I think if you're the Jazz, you're looking at how this game goes down. I think last night at points in that Phoenix game, that defense to me has been exposed as of late. If you draw Gobert away from the paint where he's most comfortable, CP3 and what's my guy, D-Book, kind of picked apart that defense. And obviously we saw that one go into overtime and go against the Jazz. On the other side, I mean, the Blazers just had a flat-out stinker against the Clippers. And I think that one, you say, we didn't even show up to start the game. Literally, we gave up a franchise record amount of points in the first quarter. So maybe you're able to dust that one off a little bit more and say, all right, let's turn it on. Let's be the team that we are.
Well, they got one of the best motivational speakers in the league in Damian Lillard. So it'll be interesting to see how tonight goes. Thank you so much. Monica, it's great to have you joining us. Thank you, Brian, Nick, and, of course, Rick Welts. We'll be back tomorrow.